Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Katie Weaver, and Bruce Albert. Dan Friedel will tell us what's trending today, and Alice Bryant will bring us this week's health report. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Hurricane Irma has weakened to a tropical storm after causing widespread damage on Caribbean islands and the U.S. state of Florida. Irma's winds eased to about 100 kilometers per hour Monday as the storm continued to move on a northwest path away from Florida. The ocean storm had been the strongest kind of hurricane, a Category 5, as it moved through the Caribbean area last week. The storm's wind speeds were measured near 300 kilometers per hour at one time. Weather officials warn that Irma is expected to keep producing high winds and heavy rain, although it has weakened. Officials in Florida were getting their first look at storm damage in some areas Monday. Irma first hit the islands called the Florida Keys early Sunday, when the storm was at its greatest strength. Later Sunday, the storm struck Tampa and St. Petersburg, the two largest cities around Tampa Bay on Florida's western coast. A storm surge near those cities caused high ocean waves to flood streets and homes. Severe flooding was reported in many other cities and towns along Florida's Gulf of Mexico coastline. Flooding also was reported in Jacksonville on Florida's eastern Atlantic coast. The storm damaged power lines and some building cranes. About 6.5 million homes and businesses remained without power across Florida, and officials said it could be weeks before power is restored in all places. An estimated 220,000 people were staying in shelters. Florida Governor Rick Scott said on Twitter he was joining members of the U.S. Coast Guard to view damage from Irma in the Florida Keys. No deaths in Florida were immediately linked to the storm. Before hitting Florida, Irma left at least 34 people dead in several island nations. 10 of those deaths were in Cuba, where severe flooding was reported in several neighborhoods in central Havana. State media reported about 1 million people were evacuated from high-risk flood areas. I'm Brian Lynn.
The United Nations human rights chief has joined a growing group of international voices condemning the government in Myanmar. The group blames the government for the wave of violence that has forced thousands of Rohingya Muslims to flee to neighboring Bangladesh. The United Nations official, Zaid Raad Al Hussein, spoke on Monday to a meeting of the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva, Switzerland. He said his office has received many reports and satellite images of the violence. He said they provide evidence of Myanmar security forces and militias carrying out extrajudicial killings and burning entire Rohingya villages. Zaid also noted reports of Myanmar troops placing landmines along the border with Bangladesh. Because Myanmar has refused access to human rights investigators, the current situation cannot yet be fully assessed, he told the council. But the situation seems a textbook example of ethnic cleansing.
On Sunday, Amnesty International accused Myanmar of placing landmines along the roads that Rohingya refugees use to enter Bangladesh. The group reported two landmine explosions. One explosion reportedly blew off a young man's leg while he was guarding cattle near the border. Zaid made his report a day after Rohingya fighters called for a month-long ceasefire. The fighters said they want humanitarian aid to be able to reach all victims of the conflict. The rebels are calling themselves the Arakan Rohingya Salvation Army. They launched an attack on several police positions and an army base late last month. The attacks and resulting fighting led to the displacement of more than 300,000 people. The U.S. ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley, sent a message to Myanmar last Friday. It said the U.S. government supports the fight against violence in Rakhine State, but the statement added that humanitarian aid must reach those in need.
Myanmar is a Buddhist-majority nation. The Rohingya are one of the country's many ethnic minorities. The government considers the Rohingya to be economic migrants from Bangladesh. It has never given them citizenship. Yet most Rohingya can prove their families have lived for generations in the country, also called Burma. The latest violence and a military campaign killed at least 400 people. It also led to the latest mass movement of Rohingya villagers to Bangladesh. Vivian Tan is the UN Refugee Agency Asia Director in Bangladesh. She told VOA Burmese that aid workers believe there are about 164,000 new arrivals in Bangladesh. The United Nations reported that about 146,000 people have crossed the border into Bangladesh's Cox's Bazar district since August 25th. Officials with the World Food Program said they have provided tens of thousands of people with food. The UN agency added that it needs $11.3 million to support the new arrivals, as well as the refugees already living in camps.
Aung San Suu Kyi is the de facto leader of Myanmar and the winner of the 1991 Nobel Peace Prize. But critics have condemned her reaction to the violence. Many observers say Aung San Suu Kyi has tried to dismiss reports of the Burmese military's violent treatment of Rohingya civilians. She said there has been a lot of misinformation about the Rohingya crisis and violence in Rakhine following the attacks on security forces. Aung San Suu Kyi used the word terrorists to describe the Rohingya fighters. And she said fake information was used to support their interests. A number of other Nobel Peace Prize winners have made statements asking her to personally intervene and end the violence. They include exiled Tibetan Buddhist spiritual leader, the Dalai Lama, South African Archbishop Desmond Tutu, and Pakistani activist Malala Yousafzai. Every year, the U.S. Department of State lists all the crises that it considers the most important human rights issues around the world. In 2016, it listed abuses against and restrictions on members of the Rohingya population as one of the leading human rights problems in Myanmar. I'm Katie Weaver.
United States congressional committees have rejected proposals to sharply cut spending for U.S. diplomatic and foreign assistance programs. In his first budget, President Donald Trump called for a reduction of nearly one-third in the State Department's budget. The State Department directs U.S. diplomatic and foreign assistance efforts across the world. On September 7th, a Senate committee voted to continue most State Department spending at current levels. A House committee earlier also rejected many of the proposed cuts. Senator Lindsey Graham, a Republican from South Carolina, chairs the Senate subcommittee that oversees State Department spending. Graham said that America faces major problems, such as the conflict over North Korea's nuclear programs, disputes with Russia and China, and threats from Islamic State militants. Now is not the time for retreat. Now is the time to double down on diplomacy and development, Graham said. By double down, he means to increase efforts rather than cut spending. Heather Nauert is the official spokesman for the State Department and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. She defended the spending cuts proposed by the Trump administration.
Just because a budget reflects a smaller number on the part of the administration does not mean that diplomacy is not important. This administration values that. We all value that. The 75,000 people who work here each and every day here and around the world value that, and we keep pushing forward with that. Okay.
Tillerson is expected to announce a reorganization plan for the State Department on September 15th. It is expected to suggest ways the department could carry out diplomatic and other responsibilities at a lower cost. One idea Tillerson may be considering is to move the processing of passports, visas, and other travel documents from the State Department to the Department of Homeland Security. A study found the change would save money and improve security, the Reuters news agency reported. The study was done for a company that is advising Tillerson on the State Department reorganization plan. Last month, Tillerson told senators that he plans to eliminate some special envoys that work on foreign policy issues for the government, Foreign Policy magazine reported. Special envoys work on international issues considered important by government officials. Among the positions proposed for cancellation are those working for the rights of disabled persons and promoting peace in Africa. Some of the work done by envoys will be given to other State Department offices, Tillerson said. He added that other envoys are no longer needed because their work was already completed. The Senate Appropriations Committee approved a bill that would provide $500 million to hold, repopulate, and establish government services in areas freed from Islamic State rule in Iraq and Syria. The bill would also provide $3.1 billion to support refugees affected by conflict and other natural and man-made disasters, with another $3.1 billion for international disaster assistance. About $19 million would be provided to help women and girls at risk from extremism in majority Muslim nations and other countries. The bill would also provide $8 million for programs to promote human rights in North Korea and another $15 million to support democracy and rule of law in Venezuela. Both House and Senate spending bills provide no money for the Green Climate Fund. The Senate Committee's spending report notes that President Trump did not request any money for the program. Trump has withdrawn the United States from the 2016 Paris Climate Agreement. Under the deal, 165 nations agreed to work together to stop rising temperatures in Earth's atmosphere. Earlier this month, Congress approved a continuing funding resolution, which provides money for most federal spending through December 31st. Final congressional votes on funding for the State Department and other agencies for the remaining 9 months of the 2018 fiscal year will come later. I'm Bruce Alpert.
This is What's Trending Today. On the morning of September 11th, 2001, terrorists connected to Al-Qaeda hijacked four passenger airplanes. They flew two of them into the World Trade Center, known as the Twin Towers, in New York City, and another into the Pentagon building in Arlington, Virginia. The Pentagon is the headquarters of the U.S. Department of Defense across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C. Just a few minutes later, passengers on the fourth airplane took control from hijackers and crashed their airplane into a field in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The plane was thought to be heading for Washington. The attacks killed more than 3,000 people. On Monday morning, President Donald Trump led a moment of silence at the White House and spoke at a memorial service at the Pentagon. At the memorial service, Trump said, "The terrorists who attacked us thought they could incite fear and weaken our spirit, but America cannot be weakened." Vice President Mike Pence traveled to Shanksville in the state of Pennsylvania to attend a service there. During the day, Twitter users wrote about September 11th using the hashtags #NeverForget and September 11th. World Trade Center was also a trending topic. Some people wrote about their own experiences that day. Others posted photos and videos of the memorials and memorial services. A New York City police officer rang a bell where the Twin Towers once stood at 10:28 a.m. That is the time when one of the towers fell 16 years ago. At the same time, sunlight brightened an atrium at the New World Trade Center. The building is designed to let a strip of light in at 10:28 a.m. each September 11th. And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
For VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. It is back-to-school time in the United States, which, for many, is bittersweet. The bitter part is for saying goodbye to carefree, unscheduled summer days. The sweet part is saying hello to a new school year and school friends. This exciting time is filled with smells of new books, paper, and pencils. Children might dress in a new set of clothes and wear new shoes. And, of course, there are the first day of school pictures that parents share with family and friends. However, going back to school can also be a stressful time for children and families. Everyone must make the transition from easy summer life to routines, schedules, and homework. Families might also stress about spending extra money for a new school year. Parents often need to pay school fees or to buy new school clothes, sports equipment, musical instruments, and school supplies. When parents are stressed, children feel the tension. Back-to-school stress is different for different ages. Younger children may feel scared to leave their families. Making new friends and dealing with bullying can also cause stress for students. Older students may stress about their appearance, grades, and getting into college. With teenagers in the United States, stress is a serious and growing problem. A 2013 survey by the American Psychological Association found that teens in the U.S. are now as stressed as adults. A high percentage of the teens surveyed say they are stressed about school, 83%, getting into a good college or deciding what to do after high school, 69%, and financial concerns for their family, 65%. 2 years ago, Danielle Lantieri began going to high school. It is a private Catholic school that she attends on a scholarship. She said the demands of the scholarship keep her very busy and stressed.
What stresses me out most at this point in my life will have to be the amount of work that I get for my teachers and the expectation that I'm supposed to, that I have. With my scholarship for high school, I'm expected to be on a sport, participate in clubs, get an above 100 average in all my classes, and I feel that it's a little impossible. Very few people end up keeping the scholarship because it's just too hard to do everything.
However, parents, teachers, and children can also help to make the transition back to school easier. Lori Bambina has been a teacher for over 20 years. She currently teaches first grade in Brooklyn, New York, at Public School 229. Her students are 5 and 6 years old. Routines and knowing what to expect, or predictability, help to reduce stress in children, says Miss Bambina. So, she focuses on the class routine during the start of the new school year.
Well, for the students, I have my classroom set up with a very clear system. So I will introduce the system and then I will revisit the system because at this young age, they enjoy structure and predictability. And that routine is very comforting and will not cause them stress if they know exactly where things are located and what type of behavior is expected of them. So that really reduces the stress and the anxiety because they have their own comfort level now.
Whether you are in first grade or 10th grade, knowing the teachers and what they expect is a good way to reduce stress. At her new high school, Danielle did not know her teachers. She did not know the best way to build relationships with them. Also, the teachers did not know her learning style. All of these unknowns caused Danielle a lot of stress.
It was the not knowing the teachers. They didn't know me, so they don't know how I work. That stressed me out. I didn't know what type of relationship I should have with my teacher. And to cut down the stress, I will email my teachers if I have a problem and try to, get to know them better.
Knowing what a teacher wants in the classroom is a good way to cut down on stress. But there are things you can do in the home, too. Mary Ann Idala began teaching in the New York school system in 1962. She retired 39 years later in 2001. She is an award-winning teacher and is also the mother of Lori Bambina, the teacher we heard from earlier. Ms. Idala advises parents to focus on the basics, get enough sleep, eat healthy foods, and turn off electronics before bedtime.
Well, the first thing they have to do is to get them on a schedule of sleep habits, and they should also make sure they have a good breakfast to keep their brains alert. And maybe before they go to sleep every night, they should start to read them a story or do something educational so they can start to reactivate their brains into using them.
The American Psychological Association makes the same suggestions on its website. They add that getting organized is also very important for parents, children, and teachers. For example, parents should keep their wallets and car keys in the same place. This way, they do not have to look for them during a busy morning. And that's the Health and Lifestyle Report. I'm Alice Bryant.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.